Hello and welcome to the 2014 Montana Congressional Debates, a partnership of Yellowstone Public Radio, Montana State University Billings, the Billings Gazette. Tonight's forum features Democrat John Lewis and Republican Ryan Zinke running for Montana's lone seat in the United States House of Representatives. I am the moderator, Daryl Ehrlich of the Billings Gazette. Tonight's format will be simple. Each candidate will give an opening statement lasting no more than 2 minutes. This will be the only part of the debate in which notes will be allowed. Mr. Zinke won a coin toss before the start of the debate and has opted to take the first question. Mr. Lewis will give the opening statement first. Questions will be asked by our panel of three journalists. It is my pleasure to introduce them now. From Yellowstone Public Radio, News Director Jackie Yamanaka. From Lee Newspaper State Bureau, Chuck Johnson, and from the Billings Gazette, Tom Lutie. Questions will be asked by our panelists, and Mr. Zinke and Mr. Lewis will be given 1 minute each to respond. If candidates exceed the one-minute response, I will interject, telling them that the time has expired. I may allow for a 30-second follow-up question to pursue a topic. There will be no closing statements. For those in the audience, I would like to remind them that this is a debate, not a rally. Yelling, clapping, cheering, or disrupting the candidates is not allowed. We have some very nice campus police officers who may ask audience members who cannot contain their enthusiasm for debates or democracy to leave the auditorium out of respect for others and candidates who have given their time for this important event. Now, let's hear from our candidates. Mr. Lewis, we will start with an opening statement by you.
Thank you, Daryl. Thank you, Billings Gazette, Yellowstone Public Radio, and MSU Billings for hosting. I want to thank Ryan for being here. Appreciate it. I was feeling a bit awkward, to be honest, whether I was going to debate an empty podium or talk to error, but I appreciate you being here. Thank you. I set out to run a campaign on Montana ideas and financed by Montanans. I'm proud of the fact that over 70% of the money we've raised in this race has come from Montana contributors, including support from all 56 counties. In contrast, more than 70% of the money Senator Zinke has raised has come from out of state, mostly from California, Florida, and Texas. In fact, tomorrow Senator Zinke is going to get on a plane and go to a fundraiser in Dallas, Texas. I have nothing against people from those states. But those states have a combined 116 members in their congressional delegations. 116. In Montana, we have one. This election is about Montana, especially Billings, our largest city. I have deep roots here. I was born here. My son was born here. My grandpa worked at the refinery at Exxon for 40 years. But this election isn't about the past. It's not about who has the stronger roots in Montana. It's not about what we were doing in the 1980s. Or the 1990s. This race is about who has the best vision for Montana's future. My wife Melissa and I wake up every working day to make life better for our kids. We all want that for our kids. So let's invest in their future. Let's invest in education, workforce development, and bring good-paying jobs to Montana. Let's balance the budget by cutting out waste, rather than balancing the budget on working families, veterans, seniors. And let's make sure Congress plays by the same rules that everyone else must follow. There's a clear contrast in this race. I will wake up, if I'm fortunate enough to serve every day, and work as hard as I can for Montana, not Florida, not California,
Mr. Lewis, your time
Texas.
Has expired. Mr. Zinke.
Well, first of all, thank you. For the Gazette, you've been gracious enough to be flexible to the last minute, and I appreciate it. And my background, my folks were from Glasgow and Glendive, and I was born in Bozeman and grew up in Whitefish when it was a railroad and timber town. I am fifth-generation Montanan, but I don't matter whether you're fifth-generation or third or first. If you have a Montana zip code, then we're all part of Montana. You know, people ask me why I run. I run because I think America's fixable. I think because the 21st century can and will be an American century, but we have to earn it. You know, many of you know that I was a Navy SEAL, and I do wear a trident in my chest. And there's a saying in the SEALs that you have to earn your trident every day. And America has to earn our liberty. every day. Ultimately, it's about protecting the American dream. I'm a son of a plumber, three generations. I'm blue collar. It is the American dream. That means having a good job, owning a house, and protecting the legacy that was given to us. The American dream has to be protected by an economy that is strong. You cannot have a strong military without a prosperous economy. You can't protect Medicare, Social Security, education, have bridges, infrastructure, unless we have an economy that is strong. What's preventing an economy that's strong? In many ways, it's the government. It's not just taxes. It's a stifling government that's preventing America what we do best. We innovate. We think out of the box. And I'm an optimist. I think we can restore America. I think when America leads, the world follows, and the world is a safer, more peaceful place with American leadership. Without it, overseas, we feel the effects. So we're going to have a fun debate. Thank you for being here. And John, thank you.
Thanks, Ron.
All right. All right.
Ms. Yamanaka, you're the first question asker, and the question goes to Mr. Zinke.
Mr. Zinke, retired General David Petraeus recently compared the overwhelmed infrastructure and public safety needs in the Bakken as a war zone. Should Congress spend federal tax dollars to address a local or regional issue, or should this be up to local and state governments? And how are we going to pay the bill?
Well, it's a good question. I've asked to be on, if I'm successful, be a transportation committee because transportation infrastructure is important. I think we can learn from the Bakken. If you go out to Sydney, you know, small town, Sydney has man camps. The problem is that we haven't developed a community along with it. Communities out there mean better tax structure, better communities, teachers can have a place to stay. Right now in Sydney, if you're a teacher, it's $2,300 a month for an apartment. That's a lot for a teacher. Infrastructure is an important element, and if you don't spend the money, and I've always said infrastructure is not an expense, it's an investment. And you have to spend the money up front, because if you don't spend money on infrastructure today, you're going to pay for it tomorrow. How do you have the money to pay for infrastructure? It goes back to an economy. You have to have an economy that's strong and prosperous.
Mr. Lewis.
Thank you, Jackie. There's no question that infrastructure is key to a growing economy and growing the economy the right way. We're facing huge challenges in eastern Montana because of the growth from the Bakken play, and whether it's clean drinking water, wastewater systems, bridges, broadband, law enforcement, jails are full in Northeast Montana, and so we do need to invest in that infrastructure. One benefit of the Keystone Pipeline would be the revenue that counties in eastern Montana would receive. Macon County, not a lot of people in Macon County, not a lot of revenue. They would stand to benefit $19 million in the first year alone of revenue if that pipeline was built there. And so we need to invest in our infrastructure. It's a cornerstone of my campaign. And I'd like to see that government play a proper role in investing in infrastructure.
Great. Mr. Johnson, you have the next question, and it goes first to Mr. Lewis.
Mr. Lewis, what role did you play in drafting the Affordable Care Act? What do you think about this law, and what would you do to improve it?
Thank you, Chuck. My opponent likes to call me one of the architects of the Affordable Care Act, and that's just simply not true. I was living in Montana at the time, and I had no more role in writing that piece of legislation than Ryan did in planning the mission to capture Osama bin Laden. It doesn't mask the fact that we have a health care problem in this country. There are millions of uninsured Americans, and we need to find a way to insure them. There are exciting things happening in healthcare right here in Montana. I believe in competition in the insurance marketplace. We have something in Montana called the co-op. 22 states have a co-op in their states. In those states that have that co-op that are providing competition with insurance companies, people are paying 8% less for their premiums. And you look at a state like Wyoming, one insurance company, they've got the highest insurance rates in the country. We've got to find a way to drive down the cost of healthcare, and one of the biggest drivers of that cost is the fact that we have millions of uninsured Americans in this country.
Mr. Zinke?
John, your role was a state director, one of the most powerful senators in our country. The role as a state director is to make sure the interests of Montana are articulated and passed on and adhered to. So when people call, businesses call to Montana and ask your staff the problems with Obamacare, the answer was, well, you know what? You got to bring your businesses down to 50 and not grow. And you can't give your people a 30-hour work week. That hurts businesses and it hurts families. And I'm sorry you were the state director, but you have to take responsibility because that was your job. And if you didn't have an input on it, then you're wrong too. Because a state director's job is to make sure the interests of Montana move ahead and get talked about and adhered to your senior.
Mr. Zinke, I'd like to ask a follow-up question. So if you're elected, what do you do with Obamacare then?
I think you abandon it. And as a naval officer, I choose my words carefully because I think Obamacare is sinking. But you just don't jump off into the ocean when a ship sinks. You have to go to a better vessel. And there is a way to have a better, affordable health care. That's, you know, there's a number of tools you can use. Tort reform. You can have pooling. You can make sure that you have low-cost clinics. You can make sure you have individual health care accounts. There are a number of tools that you can do to make sure you have affordable health care.
Thank you. Mr. Aludi.
Yes, this question is for Mr. Zinke. Mr. Zinke, I couldn't find a single reference to agriculture on the issues page of your campaign website. And so I'm going to ask you an ag question first off tonight, starting with farm subsidies, of which Montana has received more than $7 billion in the last 20 years. Farmers argue that this is a safety net that keeps them in business, protects them against catastrophic loss. But in your opinion, are Americans supporting farmers too much?
No, I don't. And I am supported by the beet farmers and a number of agricultural groups. But the problem I see is there's a nexus between East and West Coast and rural. What happens in rural Montana is a lot different than happens in New York City or the coast. And agriculture is important. Low-cost, affordable food is part of making sure we can put food on the table of Montana families. And it is more expensive than it has been. And wait until beef prices, hit the market. So I don't think that we're over-subsidizing agriculture. I think agriculture has a lot of challenges we need to look at. Probably the dominant one is water. Our Constitution says Montana's water is sovereign. And we have to protect our water with everything we have. Because if the federal government gets our water, I can guarantee it's going to be shipped south, and Montana will lose.
Mr. Lewis?
Agriculture is a huge part of the economy in Montana. 1 in 5 jobs in Montana are related to agriculture, and I'm passionate about it. If I'm fortunate enough to serve, I'd like to be on an agriculture committee, because after this election, we won't have a member on the committee, and we need one. We need a seat at the table to fight for farmers and ranchers. There's a lot of farmers and ranchers face enough uncertainty as it is. They don't need more uncertainty from Congress. And we waited almost 3 years to get a farm bill passed in this country. And that when farmers were facing the worst drought in a generation. 48 out of 56 counties last year had drought disaster declarations. That's a problem. We need to give farmers and ranchers more certainty. We need to invest in the future of agriculture as well. That's why I released an agriculture plan, a 5-point plan, and called for investing in the long-term future by giving young people the resources to start a farm and ranch, keep farm and ranch in the family, And we need to invest in agriculture. It's a huge part of our economy. It's a huge part of our way of life in Montana.
Jackie.
Mr. Lewis, you've said you support the Keystone XL pipeline. Are you concerned this will cause you to lose votes among your core constituency, many of whom oppose this pipeline, and they want the Obama administration to deny the permits? What are you telling them?
Well, I released an energy plan right after the primary in June, and it called for investing in all forms of energy, all these forms of energy that we have an abundance of in Montana. While we need to protect current jobs that we have in Montana, we need to think about the future, our kids and our grandkids, and invest in renewable energy. We both have an energy plan. Ryan introduced an energy plan, and the main difference is that I'm calling for investing in all energy, traditional oil, gas, coal, but also renewable energy. He says that renewable energy should stand on its own, even though we invest heavily, as it is, in oil, coal, and natural gas. I think we should look to the long-term future. There's exciting things happening right here in Montana. I was in Havre the other day, and the bioenergy project that they have there is world-class research that is going on there. And so let's invest in the long-term future for our kids and our grandkids.
Well, John, I wish you would have read my energy plan because it's all the above. I just don't think your energy plan that omitted oil and gas is feasible, and it's pixie dust. Oil and gas and coal are going to be part of our energy picture for a long time. I do believe in research and development. In alternative fuels, I know Greg Kegel very well. He's a good, close personal friend of mine in Havre. But there's a difference between laboratory research and development and when it's fielded. I think that research and development in the laboratory is absolutely critical on all fronts. But when you come to commercialization to actually produce electricity, you want electricity that's cheap, abundant, and stable, and not subsidized.
Mr. Zinke, I'd like to ask a follow-up on that. What part does that play, and how do you balance that with environmental concerns around coal, gas, oil?
I don't think it's a yes or no. I mean, I don't think you can have both. And certainly if you look at Colstrip. You know, it's down coal strips. $150 million is what the payroll is a year. And they pointed out to me in Rosebud County when we had the fires a few years ago that in 1 year of fires, it was equivalent to 3,000 years of particulate from coal strip. Now, you know, we always talk about, is energy destructive? It doesn't have to be. I think oil and gas, you can do it reasonably. You can do it responsibly. But to say that you're not going to use oil and gas and coal in Montana is simply naive.
Okay. Mr. Lewis, I want to come back to how do you assuage maybe some of your core voters and supporters with something like XL, which some would argue hurt the environment?
Well, I want to be part of the solution when it comes to climate change, and I recognize that we need to do something about it. And I want my opponent to be the opponent he was in 2008 when he was endorsed by the Montana conservation voters and recognized that we needed to invest in renewable energy and recognize that we need to do something about climate change. We do. We need people that are solution-oriented and protecting current jobs but investing in the future. Senator Zinke once sent a letter to President Obama asking him to do something about climate change and now is saying that humans aren't the biggest cause of climate change. That's not being part of the solution. That's putting your head in the sand, and I will be part of the solution if I'm fortunate enough to serve.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson.
Senator Zinke, when you served in the Montana Senate in 2009, voting scorecards issued by various interest groups showed you as a very moderate Republican on issues such as education, environment, and abortion. 2 years later, you became considerably more conservative on these issues. If Montanans elect you to Congress, which Ryan Zinke will we be getting?
Well, first, I'm an American before I'm anything. I'm an American, I'm a Montanan, and then I'm a Republican. First session, there was a lot of bills. And, you know, when a Republican puts a bill up, it doesn't mean it's a good bill. Not all Republicans are good bills. and not all Democrat bills are bad bills. I judge the bill on its merit, and I always have. In the second session, there were more bills, and our debt was piling up, and I think you needed to be a little more conservative and make sure our spending was under control. But don't make no mistake. I am an American first. As your next congressman, I will put America and Montana first. And that I promise.
Mr. Johnson, would you like to rephrase the question for Mr. Lewis?
Yes. Your professional career was devoted to working for Senator Max Baucus, so we can assume you agreed with where he stood on most issues. Are there any issues where you didn't agree with him? Could you list some?
Sure. Well, I served at the pleasure of him, and I did work for him for a long time, and I brought me to every corner of this state, been to all 56 counties. I got to work on legislation, including providing tax credits to businesses that hire disabled veterans. I'm very proud of my service and my time with him. And absolutely, there are many issues that we disagree on. He's a great long-distance runner. I'm a good basketball player. There's one. But in all seriousness, I don't support the continual reauthorization of the Patriot Act, for one. He voted for that right from the beginning. He also voted for the first Iraq war. And I think here we are in today's situation, and we have not learned a lot about what we've done in the Middle East. And so it's plenty of issues we disagree on. If I serve, I will ride for Montana first. That's what I'm about. And I think we need people that are solution-oriented, that are moderate Congress. That's why Congress has a 9% approval rating.
Thank you, Mr.
People don't work together.
Time has expired. Mr. Lute.
This is for Mr. Lewis. What steps on gun control, if any, should Congress take to prevent another Newtown massacre? And how would you explain your decision to the parents of school-aged children?
Yeah. Well, there's no question that what happened in Connecticut, Colorado, a national tragedy. And as a father of two young children, 8 and a 6-year-old, I can't even imagine the pain that those families have gone through. And I'm a strong supporter of the Second Amendment. We have a long history in Montana of law-abiding gun ownership. Over 60% of households in Montana responsibly own guns. But you've got these tragedies, and the first question I would ask is, what would make somebody turn a gun on innocent children, innocent people? And so I think we should put our focus on what we're doing about mental health care in this country, especially in rural areas like Montana, where there often isn't the support and the help that people need for mental issues. And we need more investment in mental care in this country.
Mr. Zinke.
Guns are an important legacy in Montana. Second Amendment is strong for a reason, because Montana is independent. We have a legacy of firearms passed generation to generation. I strongly support the existing laws in Montana because I think they're right for us. And I'll resist any legislation from the federal government on guns because it doesn't make sense here. The view from Montana is a lot different than the view from Washington on most things.
So can I? So there's no change to the gun law, in your opinion, Mr. Zinke?
I think the existing gun laws we have here are absolutely appropriate and worth fighting for.
Okay. Jackie.
Rail started out as a stopgap measure to transport oil to refineries until more pipelines could be constructed. Now rail appears to be a permanent fix. There's currently little regulation of this industry, but the U.S. Department of Transportation is starting to step up and propose some rules. I'm wondering if you think Congress needs to step in and regulate rail and this transport of crude, or do we let the Department of Transportation set administrative rules?
Mm-hmm. Is that mine? It's Mr. Zinke's first.
Well, one, I think the President should have approved the Trans-Canada Pipeline, period. We've had enough delay, and it isn't about safety. It's about a war on fossil fuels. So Congress has tried multiple times to pass legislation forcing the President to approve Keystone, and up to now has not been successful. Railroads make a big difference in Montana, not only for oil, but it makes a difference in commodities. And we're pushing too much, you know, by rail on oil. That means there's not enough rail to move our wheat and our coal and our sugar beets. And I've talked to Matt Rose personally about the issue, and he's expanding capability. But as an example of where we sit on pipelines, every day North Dakota vents or flares about 3.5 million barrels equivalent of natural gas. And whether you sit on the left or right of global warming, wasting it is unacceptable. And we need pipelines to capture it, and we need better infrastructure.
Mr. Lewis.
There's no question we have congestion on our rails, and it's energy development, it's commodity prices are high, and it's also product coming in from China and other places, and we needed to do something about it, and I called for it in my agriculture plan to call on the Surface Transportation Board and industry to come together and solve the issue of congestion. Absolutely, Congress should have a role. One role that they can have is in safety. You've got tankers coming through many towns in Montana, Livingston, Whitefish, right here in Billings, right through the bottom of downtown. And we've seen accidents happen in Canada, South Dakota, some other places. And a good place to invest in that safety and the infrastructure would be the highway bill. And Congress has dragged their feet on a highway bill. They keep kicking the can down the road without passing along reauthorization. Let's invest in infrastructure and safety on the rails, reduce that congestion through the highway bill.
Thank you. Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Lewis, we received this call this question from Thomas Culver, a first-time voter and college student from Helena. Here it is. College tuition has more than doubled since 2001. The average student loan debt far surpasses consumer and auto loan debt among young people. What is the appropriate role for the federal government concerning higher education?
Sure. Well, there's no question that student debt has become a huge problem in our society. It's a big barrier for people, young people, getting started in society and getting a job. The average Montanan leaves college with an average of $27,000 in student debt, $27,000. We need to take measures to make it easier on those folks. One way would be to allow students to refinance those loans, much as you can a house. I support efforts to be able to refinance those loans so you're not stuck with this ball and chain when you're trying. It's hard enough to get going after college in society as it is. It's a huge problem. Let's invest in education. Let's invest in the future, not straddle students with debt. We need to provide more Pell Grants in this country. My opponent supports the Paul Ryan budget. The Paul Ryan budget would cut Pell Grants. Over half of students, college students in Montana use a Pell Grant. And let's not cut Pell Grants. Let's invest
in Pell Grants. Thank you, Mr. Lewis. Time has expired. Mr. Zinke.
I was the chair of the Senate Education for a reason, because education is near and dear to me. I was a dean of Naval Special Warfare Graduate School, and I understand the link between education and jobs. And we do need to link education and jobs. And that's give incentive to skills that we need in this country. And there's a lot of skills we need in Montana, like welding. $30 an hour, there's 5 job applications ready for anyone that has a year of apprentice welding in Billings, Montana today. So education is not just about college education, it's about vocation. I do believe that incentivizing, for instance, on grants, if you're going to take a difficult curriculum that is the skill level that we need in this country, then I believe in a grant is the appropriate, because this country needs skills. And no, what I agree about the Ryan budget is a framework to balance the budget in 10 years.
Mr. Lutie.
Yes, Mr. Zinke. Women have had the right to abortion in this country for 41 years. You've identified yourself as a right to life candidate, so essentially you oppose that right. And I'm curious, what steps are you willing to take to take that right to choose away from women? And would you also want to deny women certain forms of contraception?
One is that I'm proud to be pro-life. It doesn't mean I respect the rights of others. So I also, as a state senator, supported education and prevention because it's unwanted pregnancies that I think we can make the gains. The courts ruled Congress has no power except to look at ways of educating, prevention, which is important, and making sure that unwanted pregnancies occur as rare as we can.
Mr. Lewis.
Women make critical decisions in this country every single day for their communities, for their businesses. Women put their lives on the line for this country. And that's why I take exception when politicians think that they know better than women when making healthcare decisions.
Was that anything else, Mr. Lewis? Is that a period?
That's a period.
All right. I would please ask the audience to that this is not a rally, and I am just as excited about democracy as you are, but to please refrain because it does impede on the candidate's ability to answer. Okay, Jackie.
Mr. Lewis, this question comes from Bob Filipovich of Helena. He asks, is it wise for Congress to allow national or international corporations to extract, ship, and sell fossil fuels found in the USA on the international market?
That's a good question. I think that what we've seen in this country in terms of energy development with fracking that is invented in Texas, we've seen a real energy revolution. There's no question about that. And the development we've seen in eastern Montana and in Texas and of course, in North Dakota is a huge change that we've seen in the last few years in this country. And so it's a fair question in terms of, is it time to allow corporations and companies to start exporting energy to other countries? And I don't know about that. I think that we've got a lot of energy needs in this country. We need to solve the energy needs that we have in this country first before we start exporting energy to other countries.
Thank you. Mr. Zinke.
The experts tell me we can become energy independent in 5 years. All the above. I support it for two reasons. One, national security. Now, my daughter's a Navy diver. My son-in-law is an active duty SEAL. I don't want our kids, I don't want my kids to have to fight on foreign shores for an energy source we have here. Secondly, it goes back to jobs and an economy that's prosperous. If we become energy independent, we can bring back manufacturing in this country, particularly with natural gas. Bringing back manufacturing in this country in our historical areas of Pennsylvania and, yes, Montana means jobs here. Again, you can't afford Medicare, Social Security, bridges, schools, unless we have money to pay for it. You can do it cleanly, wisely, responsibly. I believe you can.
But to sell to other countries,
Mr. When we become energy independent, absolutely. It's no different than a commodity of wheat or corn in Montana, and Montana stands a lot to gain from it.
Great. Mr. Johnson.
Senator Zinke, everyone has called for cutting the federal deficit and debt, yet Montana receives about $1.65 from the federal government for every dollar we pay in taxes. What, if any, programs in Montana are you willing to pare or eliminate as part of the process to lower the federal debt?
Well, I know that, and John, your debt reduction plan, I know it has to do with selling excess buildings, cars, and reducing congressional pay, but that's a rounding error. It's not going to make a difference. And now I support the Ryan budget as a framework to balance the budget in 10 years. You're not going to be able to cut enough to get out of $18 trillion of debt. Nor are you going to tax, because corporations and families are already overtaxed. Our way out is to grow the economy. And growing the economy is two things. Getting the government out of the way so America can innovate and think out of the box, and energy independence. If we focus on those two things, then our economy will move ahead, we'll have a prosperous America, and we will make the 21st century an American century again.
Mr. Lewis.
If Ryan is saying that it's okay that the federal government owns 80,000 unused federal buildings just sitting there, a fleet of car of owners, 650,000 cars, and, you know, I'm not calling for increasing the pay of Congress. If he's saying he's okay with that, I'm not okay with that. That's not going to solve all our deficit overnight, but we need to do a lot of things. We need to reform the tax code in this country. We haven't had a reform of the tax code since 1986. I've called for encouraging corporations that have over $2 trillion sitting in offshore accounts to reinvest that money in America, in infrastructure bonds, to help pay for the infrastructure improvements in this country. I look at it as a family that has some credit card debt. They've got five cards. They've got two or three that have small balance. Hey, let's cut those out. That contributes to getting that debt down. Our former Governor Schweitzer had all sorts of ideas to cut out overspending and wasteful spending in this state. We can do it at the federal level. Let's do it. Let's not disregard any ideas.
I'd like to go back to the last part of Mr. Johnson's questions, and both of you. Are there Montana programs that you would pair out to help in that deficit reduction cause? And I'll ask you first, Mr. Zinke, and then go to Mr. Lewis.
There's a lot of ways we can do things better. Certainly paring down, if paring down means more efficiency, and I agree with waste, but when you have an $18 trillion debt, you think you can cut your way out of this? Our Defense Department budget is $500 billion. So limited. Go to zero. That's not enough. So add Veterans Administration, almost add every discretionary budget item we have, and it's not enough. So yeah, you can cut, hiring freeze. There's a lot of ways you can pare back, but you're not going to cut your way out of the problems we're in.
Great. Mr. Lewis.
Look, there's a huge urban-rural divide in Congress today. Montana, there's a proper role for the federal government to invest in rural places like Montana. And oftentimes, rural America doesn't have somebody with a seat at the table fighting for their needs. And so I think that we actually need more help in Montana, more investment in rural America, rather than making drastic cuts, as is done in the Ryan budget.
Okay. Mr. Lutie.
Yes, this is for John Lewis. EPA climate change regulations for reducing carbon dioxide emissions by 2030 have been described by opponents as too burdensome, particularly for coal-fired power plants. And yet Montana's governor, just the other week, managed to come up with six different ways to meet those standards without shutting down or curtailing a single Montana coal plant and presumably causing no significant customer rate increase. You have people in your base that would disagree with that strongly, I would think. And how do you look at Democrats concerned about coal emissions and tell them that EPA bar hasn't been set too low?
Well, I'm glad the governor has started the conversation with the EPA regulations, and top-down approaches don't generally work well for Montana. But we need to do something about the warming climate in this country, no question. And I'd rather Montana take a leadership role, because those regulations are coming. Let's take a leadership role with energy development and taking the steps so we can protect jobs in Montana the Montana way, and not let Washington, D.C. dictate what we're doing. Facts are over 53% of our electricity comes from coal. That's a fact. Thousands of jobs in Montana that work in the coal industry. So it's not realistic to say that we should get rid of coal tomorrow. We need to protect the jobs that we have, but invest in the long-term future, thinking about the long-term future in this country.
Mr. Zinke.
Montana has enough coal for 100 years to power this nation at peak consumption. It's a known fact, and we know where it is. Now you look at what coal does today. Coalstrip, $150 million of payroll. Every coal train is $300,000 of revenue in Montana. Now, do I believe that we can make coal burn cleaner? Absolutely. And the research and development is a worthy tax water or taxpayer expense to make it happen. But to say that we can power our nation without coal or gas is simply not realistic. And I'm an all-the-above guy. I think every part of the energy development plan, energy platforms, all have their place. But they all have to contribute. Because energy independence has been a goal since the Carter administration. And fracking, yes, it has changed and made it possible.
Okay. Jackie.
Mr. Zinke, what is your position on a Montana Republican platform plank to transfer federal lands to states?
Well, I made it pretty clear. I don't want to go back to the way it was when I grew up in Montana, where we had access to our public lands, where we could have timber harvest that was reasonable. But when Deer Lodge, Montana, a little mill out there, they have to go all the way to Laramie, Wyoming, by rail to get trees. And yet they look across the valley and there's 40,000 acres of salvage timber, that they don't have access to. Libby, Montana was a double A when I grew up. It's now a B. Sustained yield is about 350 million board feet, and they can't get 10 million out. Why? Would you rather see our forests burn between Helena and Butte? Or do we want to go back to healthy forests? So I don't think we need to transfer land. I think we need to force the federal government to manage the land. Number one expense is fighting forest fires, followed by litigation, followed by managing forests. We need to manage our forests better.
Mr. Lewis.
Now, this sounds like a plan that was cooked up in Texas. It's a terrible idea, the transfer of our federal lands to state control. In Texas, 96% of the land in Texas is privately owned. 96%. I'll tell you where my opponent stands on public lands. I was up in the Flathead the other day, and there's a very important piece of legislation up there, the North Fork Watershed Protection Act. Everyone supports it. Democrats, Republicans, the local chamber of Congress, our entire delegation, Steve Daines, got the legislation passed out of the House, if you can believe that. Ryan does not support the North Fork Watershed Protection Act. And so that's how he feels about public lands. We need to protect what we have, and there's no question that transferring our lands, our federal lands, to state control will lead to a sell-off because the state can't afford to manage those lands.
Thank you. Chuck?
Mr. Lewis, should the United States send ground forces to combat the Islamic State or ISIS?
Number one, American security is our number one priority. And what's going on in Iraq and Syria, ISIS, they have no regard for human life, and they don't share the values that we have here in this country. That being said, we need to be thoughtful and responsible about making decisions on what we do there. And Congress needs to play its responsible role in that. They need to vote on authorization. It's in the Constitution. And so while I support a targeted approach that you're seeing right now, I don't want us to make the same mistakes we've been making for the last 12 years in this country. We spent over $2 trillion in Iraq, over $2 trillion. The operations right now are costing about $7.5 million a day. We lost over 4,500 American lives in Iraq. And so I don't want to be represented by somebody that is going to instant reaction to every time there's an international situation to send in ground troops. We need more responsible voices than that with these situations.
Mr. Zinke.
Well, first of all, I always like when someone else tells me what I think. So on the North Fork, no, I do support it, but I don't like the part in perpetuity. When you knock things out like natural gas in perpetuity, I don't know what the technology is going to be in 20 or 30 years, but I do support it, and John, you should do your research. Secondly is we're going to fight ISIS. We're either going to fight ISIS in the deserts of Iraq or here in America. And personally, I'd rather fight ISIS in the deserts of Iraq.
Thank you.
Well, let me close with this. No one wants to send troops less than I do. I understand the consequences, and I've seen it. My son and daughter are in the service. I don't want to send our kids over there, but I know the risk of not. And the fact of the matter is, air operations isn't going to stem the tide. General Conway, 4-star commandant, thinks as well.
Thank you. Tom.
Yes, Mr. Zinke. Trade's important to Montana. The state exports about $2.5 billion in commodities and machinery annually, and much of that goes to the Asian Pacific. But there's some division among trade unions and ag and mineral producers in this state over whether the United States should adopt the 12-nation trade agreement known as the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Where do you stand on TPP, and would you be willing to fast-track it?
There's elements that are dangerous in that. So I think it's not ready for prime time. I do think that Montana, you know, without export of our commodities, and I think it's about a $4 billion business in Montana, still the number one commodity, number one business in Montana is ag. It's incredibly important to us. But the last agreement we got in with NAFTA, you know, if you have sugar beaters, allowed Mexico to bring sugar in and then sell it at a cut price in the United States. That hurt families in Montana. So before we enter another multi-nation agreement, we got to thoroughly look at the unintended consequences to make sure it's in the best interest of Montana.
Mr. Lewis.
I want to come back to North Fork. Ryan was on a radio station and said he didn't support it because it was permanent. Do you know who else said that? Ted Cruz from Texas. Ted Cruz said, he's holding this up, this piece of legislation in the Senate that Senator Tester and Senator Walsh are trying to pass. Look, I support fair trade, and we need to find markets for our beef and wheat and other commodities in Montana, no question about that. But if I'm fortunate enough to serve, I will take a case-by-case approach with free trade agreements, and I will ask, does this trade agreement create jobs in America, and is it good for Montana?
Ms. Yamanaka.
Mr. Lewis, in Billings and in many of the Bakken-affected communities, the unemployment rate is around 3%. But this isn't the case on the reservations, and I look at the Fort Peck Reservation as an example. It's close to the Bakken, where there's an unemployment rate of over 53% among tribal members. Why do you think this is the case? And what are the challenges of improving employment on the reservations?
Sure. Well, first of all, in Indian country, we need to invest in education and workforce development, just like we need to in all of rural America and rural Montana. And that will give people the skills necessary to fill jobs so we can drive down unemployment in Indian country. What's going on in Fort Peck and northeast Montana is, frankly, that development and the lack of law enforcement infrastructure has allowed for influx of drug dealers and bad people, frankly, that have come in there, and especially on the reservation, and dealing things like meth and heroin. And we don't have the resources to deal with that crime right now. And jails are full, and we need to invest in that if we're going to have this development and if it's going to be done the right way.
Mr. Zinke.
Well, I agree that education is important, but I also look at the Indian nations as sovereign. And if you want to see bureaucracy, take a look at the Bureau of Indian Affairs and what they've dealt with for generations. No one understands the yoke of government more than the Indian nations. In the case of the Crow, they can't get to their coal. Can you imagine what happens if the coal is taken out or they can't use it in the Crow Agency? Hundreds of jobs. The Blackfoot struggling with oil. So we do need to help our neighbors. We need to make sure that they don't have an encumbered in bureaucracy that isn't streamlined, that doesn't allow them what's right. What's right to be a sovereign nation. What's right is to be good neighbors, fellow Montanans, and Americans.
Mr. Johnson.
Senator Zinke, you've said you support the framework of the Ryan budget, which passed the House this spring. It would create a voucher system to replace Medicare and pay benefits on a sliding scale based on income. Do you support that?
No, I don't. And even though my opponent constantly says that I support, I guess, cutting Medicaid and cutting Social Security, and I hate children and education and puppies. It's not true. I think America needs to keep the promises we've made. We made promises to our veterans. We've made promises to our elderly. We've made promises to those on Medicare, those who are disabled. And we need to honor those promises. Can we deliver those promises better? Yeah, I think so. Medicare Advantage was one of them. But when you take $720 billion and you transfer it from Medicaid to Obamacare, is that saving Medicare? No. I think we can do better. See, when you look at it, it goes back to being prosperous. Medicare is expensive. We know it is. But you know what's not expensive? Is running our economy where people have jobs.
Mr. Lewis.
Well, first of all, he said that the Ryan budget isn't just a framework. It isn't as aggressive as he would like. And I want to clarify something on this $716 billion in cuts in Medicare. That was in the Affordable Care Act. There were no cuts to senior benefits in the Affordable Care Act. That $716 billion in that piece of legislation was to cut out waste, fraud, and unwarranted payments to insurance companies and providers. And what did it do? Cutting out that waste extended the life of the Medicare Trust Fund until 2024. And here's the irony of that. That $716 billion, that same $716 billion, was so good that it was included in the Paul Ryan budget that my opponent supports. The only problem is the Paul Ryan budget takes it one step further and turns Medicare into a voucher system, cutting billions in benefits from Medicare beneficiaries. And don't take my word for it. Take the word of an independent organization like the AARP, who says the Ryan budget will destroy Medicare.
Thank you. Mr. Lutie.
Yes, Mr. Lewis. It's one thing to talk about cutting government spending, and yet we're in a state that receives more government funding than it actually pays in taxes. And I'd like you to name at least one thing specific to Montana that you would be willing to cut. I mean, you could look at your constituents and say, I'm sorry, but I'm pulling the plug on this one.
Mm-hmm. That's a good question, Tom, and you're not going to let us off the hook on this one, I can tell.
No.
Look, there's no question that there is waste in things like the Farm Bill, the highway bill, and other massive pieces of legislation that Montana benefits greatly from. And, yeah, we need to find that waste in those pieces of legislation. And if fortunate enough to serve, I will look for that waste. And it's not shouldn't be a free-for-all where we're just throwing money at rural areas. But are you cutting me off?
No.
Oh.
Is he still got time?
Oh, 5 minutes.
Continue. So, not naming anything specific, we need to cut out wasteful spending in the government. No question. Piece of legislation.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Threw me off.
I'm sorry.
Mr. Zinke.
Well, I think the $3.4 billion set aside for Common Core should be cut. Education is a local issue. I think we can do education a lot better. And education matters because education and jobs is linked. I was awarded a Rural School Association Legislator of the Year. I care about kids. I care about education. There's better ways to deliver it than a one-size-fits-all from Washington that doesn't match the expectations of local communities or kids.
Mr. Lewis, I'd like to ask you a follow-up on that. Mr. Zinke said cut Common Core. What is your stance on Common Core?
Well, we have Common Core because of a top-down approach that we had from the No Child Left Behind legislation. And I think we're actually making it work pretty well here in Montana. You look at what Denise Juno and teachers are doing in Montana, they're making it work. I mean, just ask Denise Juno, ask Eric Fever. Is it perfect? No. But we're actually making it work better than many other states, Common Core in Montana.
Okay. Jackie?
I believe this is the last question. I wanted to ask if you would support the return of congressional earmarks to support infrastructure projects that we've been talking about tonight.
Is that me?
That one would go to Mr. Zinke.
You know, it's interesting. Congress got rid of earmarks because they thought they were saving money. Then what happened is the administration now has earmarks in the form of grants. Billions of dollars of grants. So I think kind of we have a happy twin. I think Congress should have a say on spending money. That means if you're going to give a grant and the grant is over a threshold, I think Congress should have a say to make sure that grant is going not for who has more political clout, but for the right reasons. So I don't like earmarks because it creates a political environment where it's this versus that, and it corrupts our system. Things need to live on merit and merit alone on both sides, both the executive and the Congress. And in many cases, the Congress has lost our authority. There's whole organizations that Congress no longer has any say about building $1.2 million buildings or $20 million buildings. Or in the case, I'll stop. I can go on.
I trust you can. Mr. Lewis.
I actually agree on that point. And it's that Congress is not legislating. They don't pass legislation. So many of the decisions are passed over to the executive branch, government agencies that have never been to Sidney, Montana, have never been to Missoula, Montana, any place in the rural parts of the state. And so while I'm not advocating for the return of earmarks, there's no question that it has caused some of the dysfunction in Congress because Congress is not working together. It's all passed to the executive branch, executive agencies that, frankly, don't know what's best for Montana.
Okay. Well, we said it's the last question, but we're going to add one more curveball. And Mr. Lewis, just because it's your turn, one issue that you believe you might agree with Mr. Zinke on, and Mr. Zinke, same question about Mr. Lewis. So one issue out there that you two might agree on.
Ooh. Well, that last issue, for one.
No, that doesn't count.
That may not count, but then we can come up with two. We both agree that Congress is not getting the job done. And we also need to do something about the deficit in this country. On so many issues, whether it's immigration, deficit, energy, all of these issues are being kicked down the road for future generations. And we need to do a better job in Congress working together on these issues. And I think we agree on that concept. I don't know what specific issues that we're going to come together on here, but it's a good question.
Thanks. Mr. Zinke.
I think families. John has a wonderful family, and so do I. And I think what we want both is to make sure our families prosper, that our kids grow up in the same environment, have a legacy that we inherited from our fathers. So I think on families and the importance of families and the importance of making sure that the families are protected, violence against women, and those issues, I think John and I agree.
Well, that concludes the U.S. House debate sponsored by the Billings Gazette, Yellowstone Public Radio, and Montana State University Billings. Thank you to our candidates, John Lewis and Republican Ryan Zinke, for participating. Also, thank you to our audience. Join us on October 20th when we will have a U.S. Senate debate from Petro Theater.
Good night.